Welcome to Faye's Knowledge. If you're interested in learning about business, marketing, and personal development, this podcast is just for you. And I say it's just for you because in order to fail, we have to be willing to try. And once you try to do things for yourself, now you're learning and gaining the experience for yourself, which turns into knowledge. So this is the right podcast for you if you're looking for business, marketing, and personal development information, because now you have a chance to learn from others that have been through what you're currently going through or currently having experience, and this is the place for you to grow and develop to help become the best version of yourself. Subscribe to this podcast, and if you really enjoyed towards the end, leave a comment on your biggest takeaway from this specific episode, so that way we can deliver more content, more audio, more videos that can not only help you in your journey but can help propel you. And by propel, I'm actually saying that can help grow and push you forward in your journey. Again, welcome to Failure's Knowledge. Enjoy this episode, and please don't forget to subscribe and wait towards the end and leave a comment about this specific video, your biggest takeaway from this.
Hated being fake every day, hated being looked over for promotions. I just hated the whole environment. They had a whole block of property, and that's how I bought the first block, got them to sell the financing to me. Had a lot of obstacles. I was a teenage dad at 16, you know. I was so laser focused, I didn't put a lot of things in front of me that I didn't want to be in front of me, you know. I knew what I was building towards would eventually have the ability to replace the corporate world. Most of that stuff comes from the books. It doesn't come from anybody teaching me. It doesn't come from any environment. It just comes from reading the books and gaining the insight of how the very successful people around the world think.
Welcome back to another episode of Failure's Knowledge Podcast, the platform where we explore the lessons learned from entrepreneurial failures and how they lead to extraordinary success. In this episode, we'll uncover the challenges Chris faced on his journey, the lessons he learned, and how he turned those lessons to a mission to rebuild communities while preserving their culture. Chris, you're going to go ahead and get it started. Chris, take us back to a pivotal moment in your journey. When things didn't go as planned, what was the biggest failure or challenge you faced as transitioning from engineering to real estate?
The biggest challenge was the disappointment of being a corporate employee as an engineer, thinking I was going to be successful and life was going to be great, and got into the workforce, and I hated it. Hated being fake every day, hated being looked over for promotions. I just hated the whole environment. And so I started reading books, and then real estate just kept coming up over and over and over as a great way to create first generational wealth. That's how I got into it.
What was your first real estate book?
The typical books, Think and Grow Rich, Rich Dad Poor Dad, Entrepreneur Roller Coaster by Darren Hardy. Okay. All those books, you know, I mean, most of the self-help books are all built off of the same principles that are in those books anyway. But yeah, that was really just the first big mindset shift for me, where I really understood there's other ways to generate money besides trading time for dollars.
That's easier said than done, but you make it look super easy. Because you're buying black back the blocks, you're making a difference, and you're making an impact in the community. So how did you actually learn how to start shifting your mindset so you can start learning? Like, there's a new way, there's a different way, but I have to find this new way. Rather than just reading books, when did it actually start clicking and saying, like, there's a different way?
I think when I was flipping houses, you know, and but everybody just kept saying, well, you're gentrifying the neighborhood. You're not really doing anything beneficial. And I would go to other older black investors and builders that were in the community. I would ask for solutions, and they would all just say, this is the way it is. You just got to take it. You know, they just going to talk mess. You know, you just gotta let it roll off your back. And I'm like, no, there's got to be a better way to do this. And so I just kind of started marrying my own principles together, like what you do in single family investing. If you want to build a rental portfolio, sometimes you can do seller financing. So, you know, I found a heir of a whole portfolio. They had a whole block of property, and that's how I bought the first block, got them to sell the financing to me. So, you know, it wasn't anybody really giving me guidance. It was just me coming up with creative strategies. I mean, technically, all an engineering degree is a degree that says you know how to solve problems. So this is just another set of problems that I was working to solve.
So was the shift different from engineering to real estate? Was it just like really easy to get into real estate?
Anything is easy when you find mentors.
That's true.
So most people think they got to figure it out on their own. They got to study. They got to learn it. They got to find a deal. They got to have enough money. They got to interview the contractors. You don't need to do all that. You need to assemble a team of experts around you that understands what you're trying to do and make sure it's mutually beneficial for them. So that's what I did when I started. One of my line brothers worked for Home Investors, which is the biggest wholesale company in the country. And they had a whole bunch of inventory they couldn't sell. They were also flipping houses themselves. So I picked a house. He actually gave me one of their contractors that they used to flip all their houses. And collectively, we were able to do the first deal. I was able to get the hard loan, borrowing against my 401k from my job, like $14,000. And I flipped that first house and made like $40,000. So it wasn't hard because I wasn't trying to do it myself. When you try to do it yourself, that's what you set yourself up for failure.
I think this is where I messed up at. When I served in the Marine Corps during 2020, while I served from 2018 to 2022, mm-hmm. and I got into real estate in 2020, and I was trying to do everything by myself. I was trying to learn. I was trying to cold call. I was trying to wholesale. And I came across somebody that my mama knew who was in real estate, who was doing wholesaling. But when I reached out to them, they didn't even want to help me because they stopped communicating. And yeah. So I'm like, now I got to figure it out by myself. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you figured it out, and it's like, you didn't have to learn everything. You didn't have to do everything. You just had to get connected with the right person. Mm-hmm. And when you connected with the right person, it's like, it's a cheat code to your mm-hmm. success.
Yeah. It's okay to be a copycat. You just got to copy off the right cat.
That's experience talking. How long did it take you to actually learn how to copy the right cat?
Man, like I said, I started off doing it that way, but I always knew that it's impossible to learn everything. And even though, you know, school kind of conditions you to be on an island where you got to learn it, you got to perform, you got to know it all. And people always brag about, I got it out the mud. That's a long way to do anything. I mean, So part of the philosophy came from the book Think and Grow Rich, where when Henry Ford was suing the newspaper for defamation of character because they said he was ignorant, he's like, why do I have to fill my mind with all this useless information when I can push a button on my desk and get an answer to any question I want? And so that's what really made it click for me. Is like, I need to have a contraption on my phone is my buttons on my desk now. My emails is my button on my desk now. I can get the answer to any question I want as long as I got the team. So I don't need to be the expert.
Did you watch the movie or did you just read the book with that as well?
I just read the book.
Grow Rich.
No, I read the book. I didn't see the movie.
Well, yeah, I read the book mm-hmm. and I also saw the movie. Then what you described, it was in the movie. So that was perfectly positioned. But when he said he was like getting interrogated by people in the mm-hmm. courtroom, he was like, Henry Ford, do you know like how many continents in the world, anything of that nature? How many countries here? Mm-hmm. He was like, I don't see why that question is relevant because it doesn't matter. Yeah. He said, if I want to know that, I have a button, a desk with a whole bunch of buttons. I can press a button. Mm-hmm. I can find somebody that know mm-hmm. what you're talking about. They can answer.
Yeah,
I don't need to be the smartest. I just need to be around the right people.
That's right. If you ever watch Undercover Boss, the CEO never knows how to do all the jobs, but he still runs the whole company. And that's your job. Your job is to find the people that are subject matter experts and put them in the right positions and then lead them. It's not your responsibility to know everything.
When you was taking your classes at Southern, what was it called? The HBCU that you attended, Southern?
It's Southern University.
Southern University. Okay. So now I'm taking business management. As you taking your civil engineering classes, did you take business classes as well? Or were you learning business outside of school?
I didn't learn business until I got outside of school. I didn't even know what business was. I thought everybody had a business degree, just worked at a bank or something. I figured it out in the real world. I mean, business really is nothing more than psychology. It's you have something to sell to somebody. You got to figure out how to convince them to take part in it. You got a product idea yourself, whatever it is, you're selling something in business, and then you have to manage the process. That's life in general for sure. Unless you're just an employee that just wants to go to work and go home and collect a check and have that peace of mind and have to worry about anything outside the box. Anything else you do is some business component tied to it.
And so you always are, what is it called, integrating, or you always finding, you said you're a problem solver, which means that you're constantly thinking about different ways to like mm-hmm. solve a particular problem, which means that you go deep with the problem. Mm-hmm. So I
go deep with the solution, not the problem.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You go deep with the solution. Yeah. So you're always thinking of different ways that something can be better. Mm-hmm. You train yourself to
to learn that type of way, or you just grew over time with it?
I think that's just how I've always been. I've always been like a high achiever. I've always never taken no for an answer. I've always had a lot of obstacles. I was a teenage dad at 16, you know? So, you know, so things like that make you realize that a hurdle can either be motivation or it could be a setback. And so we always use it as motivation to figure out a solution. And especially, I love when people say things can't be done, because there's always a solution for something. It's always impossible until somebody does it.
We had went to this conference, and it was called the Money Is Conference. And they got to explaining, like, when you start doing things and you don't fully understand how to do it, don't say that it can't be done. Ask, how can it be done?
Right.
Like, can you do this?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than no. Yes, but how? Mm-hmm. Okay, who do I need to reach out to? Who do I need to connect with? And the fact that you was a dad at 16 years old, which means that you have to grow fast.
Mm-hmm.
You have to become more mature fast, because now you're not just taking care of yourself. You have someone else that you have to take care of. So that responsibility not only increased, but it multiplied, because it's no longer you by yourself.
Right.
What was your biggest downfall when you was learning how to mature within yourself?
I don't think I had a downfall. So, I mean, you know, when you have self-confidence, failure is just feedback on what you need to adjust. So I don't consider anything a downfall. You know, I did miss a lot of the things a lot of other people were able to do growing up, because I was working, you know, taking care of my son and my mom too. So, you know, but I think all that just built resilience, and it just built more character for me to be able to, you know, basically not have any will to quit for anything, because I had too many people depending on me, and too much emotion for me to ever stop. Because when you stop, that's when everything, the only time you really fail is when you stop. So you got to keep going.
That's true. That's true. I learned that. So I was raised by a single mom who raised 3 boys by herself, and she never stopped. She has 8 degrees working her 9th degree.
Mm-hmm.
That is a lot of school. And the fact that she kept going, not only to provide for us, to provide for herself, to provide for everything, feed us, feed herself, she had to do a lot. Mm-hmm. So if she lay down and rest and just stopped showing up, then nothing would happen. Nothing would ever come from that. And I learned why growing up and becoming more of myself, learning more about who I am, is that you have to keep going. At some point in life, you have to sacrifice. And I learned the importance of sacrificing. Because sometimes you have to say no to things that appear fun, so you can start planning for the future and prepare accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
Was it hard for you to say no to things that you wanted to do, or was it just like, I'm in the grind, I'm working, I know what I have to do and who I'm doing it for? Was it hard for you to say no to opportunities?
Well, it's hard to say no to opportunities. No, I don't think so. But I was so laser focused, I didn't put a lot of things in front of me that I didn't want to be in front of me. You know, I kept to myself. I curated who I was around. I made sure I was only around people that was thinking like me, on the same wavelength. Because a lot of people waste too much time trying to convince other people what's possible, what you can do, or how you're gonna do it. When the energy should be just focused on, you know, reaching that goal, and afterwards they can ask you how you did it. That's a whole lot better way to do it. But yeah, I don't think I had too many of those challenges, and you know, my circle was tight, and I kind of stepped away from my old friend circle, and people that gravitated towards me were like minds. So that's really how I was able to keep a level head and focus on whatever goal I had at the time, whether it was flipping or getting into new construction or doing the crowd funds, or, you know, building up the real estate business to quit my job. Because you did ask that question earlier. So I started flipping houses in 08. I didn't quit my job in 2015, and I was staying at the job because it was cool. You know, I was working from home. I was working 3-4 days a week, traveling a little bit. I was able to build the real estate business on the side. But then eventually something happened at work where a VP was trying to throw me on the bus for something that wasn't my fault. But by that time, I had built up my income so much with the real estate that I could just walk away and not even worry about it, not even stress about it. So that's another side note. Some people want to get their job right away and go head first, dive off a cliff into entrepreneurship. But that's really not the best way to do it.
No, it's not. I read your bio, and you just mentioned it as well, that you started in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that when the recession was happening?
That was, but that was the best time to buy because so many people were losing properties.
Because it was low.
Yeah, so from an investor's perspective, you can get stuff way below market value and way below what they call replacement cost, which is way what it costs you to build the same thing. So that was a great time to buy. And everybody that was losing their houses to foreclosure still had to live somewhere, so they were renting. So now you build a rental portfolio with a whole bunch of property you bought way below market value. So yeah, real estate is a game where if you understand how to play it, you can make money in any cycle.
And you say you left the job in 2015. Mm-hmm. 2008 to 2015, you was building up this your real estate side business.
Yep.
You eventually, unfortunately, something happened at work, and for you to actually realize, like, I'm going to be okay. Mm-hmm. But for you to even understand that you were okay came from the sacrifices, came from the amount of work that you put in, came from you understanding that you have to do it every single day.
Thanks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 100%. I was working 8-9 hours on the job and working 8-9 hours on a business every day. Like a lot less sleep. But, you know, I knew what I was building towards would eventually have the ability to replace the corporate world. So that was the focus. So you just got to take a sacrifice for a little bit, you know, and believe in yourself and build the right team. That's all it really takes.
Easier said than done.
It's not for everybody, too. You know, everybody can't be an entrepreneur. Everybody's not cut out for it. You have to be an internally motivated person. An internally motivated person, somebody that gets up, takes initiative on things, and figures things out. An externally motivated person is someone who prefers to be given a set of goals and rules and guidelines and being structured on how to get to that part. And if nobody is giving them input or encouragement, then they're not gonna pursue it. Those type of people do great in the work world, in the corporate world. You can still become a millionaire being a corporate employee if you can follow that structure and build your way up that way and meet all the goals and metrics. There's entrepreneurs that got all the internal motivation, but they broke. So you know, I don't judge either person from either side, but you have to know your personality type and know what works for you.
I learned, you just said that a lot of people, everyone can't be a CEO. Mm-hmm. And while I'm in class in business management right now, I'm taking like different courses for mm-hmm. my major. But right now I'm in human resources. Mm-hmm. And my professor, because I'm only 25 years old, she was like, how much does the CEO get paid at Amazon or what is it called, Whole Foods, or different places that a CEO is at? Mm-hmm. And then I got thinking, I was like, how does a CEO get paid so much money, but the people at the bottom is on everything don't get paid that much? Mm-hmm. And then they clicked. It was like, oh, a CEO not only understands the business aspect of it, but they understand leadership, they understand communication, they understand mm-hmm. the future plan, they understand how to project where the business is going. Mm-hmm. Everyone can't be an entrepreneur because they haven't developed the skill.
Yep.
Facts. And I was like, oh, that's crazy.
Yep. No, I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, there's only one position at the top, and it takes a lot of skill to be able to run an organization that big. Sometimes the pay can be a little bit excessive, but in comparison to what the CEO makes for all the shareholders and owners and everything in the company, it's a very small percentage. But relative to what the regular staff makes, yes, it is a lot of money. But, you know, the more value you bring, the more value you can extract out of whatever you're in.
Have you ever read this book called The Goat Giver?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have?
Yeah. It's probably about 20 years, but I did read it.
Mm-hmm. Have you read what is it called? They have like different books from The Goat Giver, but they also were Goat Giver, but it's like Goat Giver Leader, Goat Giver Influencer, Goat Giver Sell More. And then I think
I can't remember which one I read. I know I didn't read the whole series, but I know I read at least one of them. But that, like I said, that's when I was like blazing through a whole bunch of books, and a lot of them have all the same principles in them. So you know, it kind of gets repetitious.
It does.
So at some point, you just kind of stop reading them because you're like, okay, I got it by now. But it's a great series of books. But I can't remember. Maybe mine was Leadership.
I think that's the one. It was in the book. It says like, if you want to make more, you want to make a bigger difference, mm-hmm. you have to provide more value. Mm-hmm. So the one-on-one or the small setting, if you want to really increase your value, you have to get in front of a lot more people. And as I'm hearing, yeah. I'm like, that make a lot of sense, because you can't necessarily make a difference for anything, but you have to deliver the value for the things that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And by you buying the block back, you're bringing the value because you're able to redevelop the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so what when you was on the block back, what was your biggest fear? Or did you have any fear?
No, I really didn't have no fear. like I said, when you have a team around you, experts, there's no reason to have fear because they play every key role from my real estate team to my real estate attorney to my contractors, my property management, my architects. Everybody knows their job in and out, so you don't have to worry about what you don't know. They know and have learned from more things than you could ever think of in the moment. So that's the importance of building that team, and that way you can move without hesitation or fear because you're relying on a team of experts versus your own limited exposure.
I know you mentioned something about the subject matter experts for my audience. Is there a way where you can explain that deeper? Even though you just did, but explain what it really means so that way people can start understanding that who to look for.
Well, it doesn't matter what industry you're in. So this is my success triangle. You need three things to be successful at whatever you do. You need the knowledge and experience, you need the opportunity, and you need the money. So usually you have the opportunity, but you'd have to partner with the people that have the knowledge and experience. And then collectively, you can go get the money once you have the opportunity and the team. So it doesn't matter what you're doing. But in real estate, let's say if you're doing new construction, you're going to need an experienced surveyor, an experienced architect to help you design whatever you want. You're going to need engineers to help you make sure it's structurally and functionally sound, that whatever the architect designs. You're going to need a contractor that has experience building. So you're going to need the realtors and brokers to help you plan whatever exit you're going to have with it, and also give you insight on how it should be designed based on what else is selling in that area and in the local market. So those are the key players you need on the team. And if you have all of those, then you really don't have much of an issue. When you go to the bank and the bank says, well, you don't have any experience, you can say, well, my contractor's been building 10 years and they've built 55 houses, and my architect has designed 100 houses, and my realtor has sold 100 houses, then there's a lot more acceptable or amenable for you to be able to get the type of the funding you need for the projects or get investors to put money in. Because, you know, a lot of people take a course or go through a mentorship program and try to go raise money, but you're still a rookie. That's like saying, I need open heart surgery, but I'm gonna go to a surgeon that's never performed yet. No, you're not gonna do that. You wanna go with people that have a lot of expertise, because this is a lot of money at the table. It's all about having the right team. And, you know, then, like I said, that always will eliminate the fear.
That make a lot of sense. When I had started back in, when I was doing real estate, my mentors, Mike Imbrigli and Steve Anderson, they was working on a project, and I think that was when they bought the house wholesale, and now they're fixing it up and having to cut the yard, clean it up, what's called demolition, have to demolition the place. And so when I first started being around them, the place, the properties they was working on, it needed a whole bunch of work. The trash was there, the yard needed to be cut, the place still needed to be remodeled. It needed to be remodeled. And so they let me come down there. And when I went down there, of course, I didn't have no experience. I didn't have no money. I'm still in the Marine Corps serving. And so when I get down there, there was like a hill, like a steep hill, but the grass was growing on the hill. Mm-hmm. And so Mike and Steve, they had to go somewhere. So I'm like, I'm just here. So rather than me just being here, it was me and another guy that was working with. I picked up a weed eater. And I'm cutting the grass on a steep hill. And mine just it's hard to keep your balance, but I'm bringing some type of value. And what they taught me during that time, what I didn't even recognize until you just mentioned it, was that I went with somebody who had the experience. Mm-hmm. I wasn't trying to figure out about myself no more. I didn't have the experience. I didn't have the money, but I had work ethic. I was willing to work. And so they gave me an opportunity to cut the yard, cut the grass, and just be in the area, be in their vicinity, and really just learn more about what real estate was, what cold calling was, how to find a deal, how to find a bad deal, how to find a good deal, how to look at the numbers. And when I understood that, I said, it matters when you get around experience, mm-hmm. because experience can teach people that don't know nothing about what they're doing.
Okay. Facts. That's what it's all about. That's the key to it. Learn from other people's time, energy, efforts, and failures.
Have you ever had a deal that didn't go as planned, where like you did your numbers and the numbers looked like that they was going to be good, but as you go through the process of trying to close it, it doesn't seem like that it's going to be a great deal, so it just falls out and now you have to go to another one?
When you got key factors like when you're doing your financing budget and then the interest rates go up, you know, then that can kill a deal. The reason why I like new construction more than flipping is you do eliminate a lot of the unknowns that you have in flipping. When you flip a house, you don't know what's behind the wall until you open it up, or what's really in the attic until you get in there and start changing the AC ducts or something like that, or under the floors. So yeah, I mean, most of the projects, they're never on the exact same budget that you think, because you never really know all the details. But like I said, those are just learning lessons most of the time. I think the one time I did lose a significant amount of money was when I was trying to get into new construction, and I was trying to work with, once again, a team of people that had like mine. We were all ambitious. We all had experience flipping, but nobody had done new construction. And so that was the biggest mistake, is like having them at the table planning and think you're going to make so much money and this project was going to, you know, come to fruition in a certain amount of time. And it never happens because of just little things that we needed to tweak that we didn't tweak, like floor plan designs, like how to get initial funding for the deal, thinking we can go to the hard money lender when we needed to raise private capital, things like that you just don't know unless you've done it.
So for someone that's new or that want to get into real estate, though, that's new, what advice would you give them? Like, what would you tell them to start, and why would you tell them to start there?
So people can't dime to start at the same level. I got people that start wholesaling because they have a lot of time, they don't have a lot of money. People that start off flipping, just because they have a little bit of money and some time. Some of them want to be the general contractor themselves. Some of them hire a general contractor so they keep their time free. Some people hop straight into new construction with you. You know, if you have $70,000 to $85,000, you can hop into a new construction project and in 12 months make your money back and make $100,000 in profit. But once again, it comes down to you having the right team of experts around you to help you execute. So each person's situation is case by case, but in every avenue, every lane, I suggest you partner with somebody that's got experience or find a mentor that you can pay in exchange for the learning, because you're going to pay for it either way. You're going to pay for it in time, energy, effort, and failure, or you're going to pay to learn from somebody that's already done that and you get it right the first time.
Yeah, that. I wish I would have heard that a while ago.
It's reality.
It is. And what I learned is that ambition can only take you so far because you don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Right. And just because you don't know what you're doing, now you're trying to figure everything out. I remember door knocking one time because I was in California. And when I was door knocking, I'm going around a different house. Of course, I don't know what type of house to look for, but I'm mm-hmm. just going around different houses, just knocking like, hey, how you thought about selling your property? Or how you thought about selling your place? That probably was the wrong script or probably the wrong state. You know what I mean? So yeah. I had went to this one door, this one house, and I had knocked it. Mm-hmm. And so I took a step back and I'm just waiting. I'm like, okay, maybe they didn't hear me. So I step in again and I knock again. Then I step back. When I look to my right, there's a screen mm-hmm. where I can see through it. Mm-hmm. But you can't really see through it if you're not paying attention. But if you're paying attention, you'll be able to like really see what's behind there. Mm-hmm. And so I happen to look to my right, Chris, and it's a guy on the other side just staring right at me. Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, time for me to go. Yeah. It was That's time dope. For me to go because... One, of course, I'm on his property. He don't know who I am. But then mm-hmm. two, he was an older white man. And I'm like, yeah, man, I don't want no problems. Let me right. go
ahead and go. Right. Yeah, bro. I mean, see, experts would have told you it's a better way to do that. You know, tell you, number one, you don't want to waste your time on anybody that owns a house. You want to target motivated sellers, people that have a reason to sell. But you don't know what you don't know until you're around people that already have done it.
Mm-hmm. And when you start to get around people that understand what they're doing, now you see things differently. Mm-hmm. Now you can go to the mentors, to the people who have experience, and say, hey, I'm dealing with this problem. I want mm-hmm. you to go knock the door. But as I'm knocking the door, no one is answering. What can I do better? Or what can I even, just how can I position myself differently? Mm-hmm. And for you being the expert, you're able to see the problem and discuss the solution because you're so in tune with the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's facts.
That's what I also learned, that people who have experience, they've been doing it for so long. So you're not starting from the bottom. You're really, it's a cheat code.
Right.
When did you identify that you had your breakthrough? I know you said 2015, but did that really click when you had when something happened at your job and you had the cushion to leave? Was that when your breakthrough came, or was it when you actually left your job, was running your business full time, and then that's when the breakthrough came?
I think everything I've done has always been a breakthrough, from being the first person to graduate college and get a job and realize I hated it, like first year, started flipping houses. For me, it's not necessarily a specific moment in time. It's just a continuation of continuing to do things that I see a challenge that nobody else is really trying to fix. So like from flipping to the seller financing for the entire block, to doing a new construction in a zip code with no new construction, to doing $1 million crowdfund to protect other people in the community that weren't being, you know, considered in those equations, because renters are usually the first ones to get displaced, because people sell to investors that want to flip the house and you know, increase their personal net sales price. But in actuality, you can make just as much money by holding the property and letting the value increase if you're close to big developments. So, you know, doing that, and then from there, getting the opportunity to buy a $6 million church and 3 years later sell to the housing authority for $11 million. Everything is like a year or two separation, but it's just continually moving. So I think the only big breakthrough would happen is when I started reading the books, and that's what started me on the path. Ever since then, I never looked back.
So the breakthrough came from the books?
Of
course, the different phases.
Whenever an event happens, that's not the breakthrough. That's the results of the breakthrough. Mm-hmm. So you've already been put in motion all of the steps to get to that point, and that point just happens. But had you not had the right mindset, had you not put energy, effort into what you were trying to do, had you not stopped, had you not stopped, and had you quit, you wouldn't be there. So that's just the finish line. The breakthrough happens way before that. And I think people get that misconstrued too, because, you know, that's like saying once somebody makes it to the league, that's their breakthrough. No, that they worked 10, 12 years every day at practice, year round, whatever, to get to that level. So all that is the real breakthrough. That's just a showcase at the end.
It's kind of like kind of like a trophy for your hard work.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The trophy, you still have to do the work that you put in to get.
Exactly.
To
yeah. It's an acknowledgement of everything you've done to get to that point. Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. So were you able to see the value that you was bringing in, and the amount of people that you was having, that what the people reactions when you was blind the block, you was crowdfunding $1 million, when you was making so much of a difference? Did you see the value that you saw in other people? Like, hey, I'm actually helping someone. Like see me, or see that it's more here.
I mean, yeah, that's the whole purpose of why I was doing it, to protect other people. I don't have a selfish mindset. I don't need a trophy wall. I just like to show other people that things can be done. And yeah, I mean, I raised $1 million on social media. So, you know, everybody that invested understood what I was doing, what the mission was, who we were trying to protect, because everybody identified with that situation. So yeah, I mean, it impacted 1,500 people that invested. I got some of my investors that live in the neighborhood and grew up there their entire lives. They're 50 or 60, but they've been renting their whole life. So this is the only piece of real estate that they own in the community that they grew up in. And then the residents there, we had 20 units on one property. We were able to keep all of them in place without having to raise their rents, because we found creative ways to generate revenue from doing event spaces and stuff on the site. So yeah, it's definitely impact. And, you know, people tell me all the time that because of what they saw me do, they believe that it's possible that we can rebuild our own communities. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, I definitely, the whole focus is impacting other people and giving other people the clarity and understanding that it is possible.
So you have to be the example so others can see the example. Right. When they start recognizing the example, then they can have the belief that they can do it as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%.
Did you learn that in your corporate job, or did you learn that as soon as you went full time in real estate?
No, it's just a mindset, man. It's like most of that stuff comes from the books. It doesn't come from anybody teaching me. It doesn't come from any environment. It just comes from reading the books and gaining the insight of how the very successful people around the world think. That's what those books really are based on. So once some of those ideas, you kind of have them in your head, but then when you read it, it's like, okay, this is what I've been thinking about. This is what I've been feeling was the right way to move. So then you have confirmation that that's how you should proceed forward, whatever you're pursuing.
You have a better understanding based off the language they're using. Do you start to understand why they're using a specific thing as far as like mindset, the way you're thinking, the way you control what you're thinking? There's a book here called The Art of the Deal. And in the first page, like as soon as I opened the first book, it says, if you're going to dream, why not dream big? Mm-hmm. I said, that's about it. That's the book right there. To this day, I still haven't read it. But it's important to actually understand that you can dream big when you learn from others that have dreamed big.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, once again, that goes back to personality type. Not everybody wants to be that ambitious, take those big risks. But if that is you, then yeah, you can't be complacent. You have to always surround yourself with people that are more successful than you and be willing to learn from them, no matter how much you think you know something. That other person has already been through the circumstance like that, and they have recovered from things you haven't even thought were possible. So yeah, dream big, but follow the right people that want to guide you and do it with integrity.
That's experience talking right there.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
That's experience. Well, the most recent person that you have helped, or not necessarily the most recent. Can you recall a time when someone came to you and explained the difference that you was making for them?
Well, I started a third cohort of new construction students, and on the call last night we had a guy that was like, you know, so we started from scratch. We'll teach you who you need on your team, you know, how to find the lots, how to design and everything. And he hopped on the call and he's like, well, I'm already past all that. I'm about to start constructing. So I need y'all to kind of look over my plans and make sure everything's good to go. And I'm like, wait a minute. I was like, let's slow this down a little bit. Said, who's your contractor? Oh, my contractor is the guy I've been flipping houses with for the past 9 years. I was like, has he ever done new construction? Round up. No, he hasn't, but I think he can figure it out. No, that ain't the time and place for that. Your architect, who's your architect? Same one. They've been helping me remodel rooms and change them. So you telling me they don't know how to design from the underground plumbing all the way to the roof, and they don't know what good floor plans are and bad floor plans based off of what other new construction realtors are telling them the buyers like and don't like. And then your contractor don't know either, so neither one of them knows. So you're just gonna design something that's gonna pass code but might not sell. I was like, see, no, you're starting off all wrong. You got to back that up. Where are you getting your money from? Oh, I got this guy that's a private lender. He gonna give me some money because he said since I'm new, I probably won't be able to get a hard money loan, and his terms are gonna be pretty stiff. I probably have to pay a little bit more money than I would have if I had some experience. But I'm just gonna take whatever they give me. I'm like, no, you about to lose. You are on a crash course for failure at this point. So these type of things happen every day. You know, people just don't know what they don't know, and they think they can just figure it out. He didn't even know what his exit plan was going to be with it. He didn't know if he was going to put it on Airbnb, if he was going to rent it, he was going to sell it. He's like, man, I'm just going to build it, and then I'll figure it out later. I'm like, nah, you can't do that either. What happened if another COVID recession hits and you're stuck with the property? You don't have a plan. If you think you can rent it for a certain amount and you can't, and you try to sell it, but you realize you overbuilt it, you should have built it smaller to make it profitable because nobody's buying houses that big in this area. You got to know all those factors before you get into a deal. Before you start construction, for sure. So, but yeah, I mean, every day is helping somebody. All my other students in the program helping them. The landowners that I partner with that don't know what to do with their properties, helping them. You know, people that want to invest but don't want to have the time, energy, effort, or a lot of money, they can invest less than $1,000 and be in an investment with me and make money. So everything I do really is helping people.
And the reason why I asked it, because many times in life, it's understanding the mentor and the experience that they have, and the fact that you just solve everything because of your engineer brain. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that you're thinking of every solution behind one problem. Mm-hmm. And the one problem can multiply so much because you don't know what you're doing. I used to often say, you only know what you don't know. And then people was like, what? That don't even make sense. I'm like, how? You don't know what you don't know, but you know what you Then I was like, oh, okay, you know what you don't know, that don't make sense. But you only don't know what you don't know, which means that you don't know what to expect, you don't know what to look for, and you don't even know what you're doing at some point. And when I start to really get around others that's really positioning themselves not necessarily position themselves, is doing the work to be successful and change their lives and change everything that they're doing, it was a process that they had to go through, because everyone starts at ground level zero.
Mm-hmm.
But I've learned by learning about money, learning about everything that I'm doing now, is that everyone or majority of people who has money always started at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Then they work their way up. They're self-made because they have to make themselves learn the information.
Mm-hmm.
Now I was like, oh, that makes sense. What is your favorite book to date?
Entrepreneur Roller Coaster by Darren Hardy.
Entrepreneur Roller Coaster.
Darren Hardy, yeah.
I'm going to write that one down. I don't think I got that one. What was the main takeaway from that book?
It talks about all of the psychology and the mindset of being an entrepreneur and dealing with the highs and the lows and being resilient through the process, you know, and, you know, having that moment of clarity at the end that, you know, you're on the right path. So it's a really good book.
I'm gonna have to look that one up. I'm gonna have to read that one. Do they have that one on Audible?
Yeah, they definitely have it on Audible.
Okay, yeah, I'm gonna have to look that one up. So, as the only African American development partner with the Houston Housing Authority, how's the role allowed you to influence broader urban development?
So, I was that when that bio was written, I was, but since then, I've been able to bring on two other African American developers. They're actually much bigger than me, but I was able to already have a place in the room to be able to invite them and get them a seat at the table. So even that right there is big, you know. It's not about being able to execute everything on your own, but once again, about having the right opportunities. And the Housing Authority services 85% Black population in the city of Houston. So, you know, they want to have representation from people that look like them. But you know, so far the experience hasn't been bad. It's always just a learning curve of scaling up from, you know, from flipping to rental portfolios to new construction and doing big, large scale development. We're working on like a $85 million, 400 unit apartment complex deal right now, where I'm partnering with them, but I had to bring on the bigger Black development partners to help me put the project scope together, plan it out, execute on it, and operate it basically. So, yeah, but you know, it's been good. It's been good. I'm the only person in the room a lot of times. Even in my age, I'm the youngest person in the room a lot of times. But you get used to it and you don't even think about it. You just go with the motion, you know, and just keep pushing forward, because somebody's got to do it. It might as well be you.
Somebody has to do it. It might as well be you. And what you just said, that you're always the youngest in the room. Mm-hmm. I'm always the youngest in the room. So I connect with you on that one. You remind me, ask how old are you?
I'm 41 now. I started flipping houses when I was 22. And I quit my job when I was just about 31.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So yeah, going on 10 years, I've been free. But I mean, now, I mean, I just did a real estate conference with two young brothers. Abram is 26 and he's probably doing $8 or $9 million worth of new construction deals in Nashville right now. And then his buddy Paul is 24 and Paul has $28 million houses under construction in Nashville. So, you know, don't let age feel like it's a hindrance on you. Now I'm 40, but I'm probably one of the youngest Black developers in the country doing $85 million projects with housing authorities. So each age group, you know, there's a different hurdle to get past, but it's nothing wrong with thinking that you can do it before everybody else can, because ages just get younger and younger when people accomplish every goal.
I'm gonna have to keep that one. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to keep that one. Speaking of your event, like, how did your event go?
Oh, it went really well. We had about 150 people show up, and it was a 2-day conference where we basically gave the attendees everything they needed to know about new construction, from building the teams, sourcing land, to executing, the underwriting deals, to interviewing and screening lenders to figure out what's the best loan product for you, and then execution and exit. So we talked about all of it at the event. So it was really good. I had the bank come that's given me about $4 or $5 million worth of loans for my different projects. And the land bank president came and spoke and talked about how to apply to get lots from the Houston Land Bank and what to do and what not to do in the application. So it was very tangible, technical information that people could take action steps on afterwards. And I haven't heard anybody give any negative feedback about it, except maybe they were sitting too long in those chairs. But as far as the value was there.
You know, sometimes you got to sit down long enough till you get mm-hmm. everything. So that's good. One thing, so it's important to build something first and start working on learning more about what you like to do. Build something first or work with others so you can build something. And then when you start building something, you get in a different room because now you have repetition, you have experience, and you have results behind everything that you're doing. So mm-hmm. would you say that's the most important thing to do, to just start today and figure out the rest later on?
Yeah. You're never going to know it all. So just start where you are. And like I said, have a team around you that can guide you. And, you know, you'll learn as you go. And you won't waste time in analysis paralysis.
Do you come across a lot of people that struggle with analysis paralysis? Like they want to learn so much, they want to read so many different books, they want to watch so many different videos, but they never start doing real estate or doing development, new development?
Yeah, I think that's what anybody in any industry, everybody wants to do something, but very few people actually take the risk to step outside of their comfort zone to do it. I don't spend a lot of time with those people. I can usually read them right away. When they talk too much and you check in with them a few days later and they're at the same spot with the same excuse, that's not somebody you want to waste your time, energy, and effort on trying to convince to do anything. You just got to let them be who they are, live their best life. And then when you give somebody some advice and you see they've actually taken steps towards completing whatever you tell them, that's the people you work with. And that's just how you roll.
That's your wisdom kicking in. That's your young mm-hmm. wisdom kicking in, Chris. Mm-hmm. I saw your YouTube, one of your YouTube videos, and I questioned. I'm like, first off, why are you not posting so many different more videos on YouTube? Mm-hmm. And then second off, I was like, the information that you gave when it was about, I think it was like a month ago or something like that, when you was explaining the new development and everything that it goes on into it. And then one person asked a question about, I don't think somebody asked a question about it, but you mentioned that when somebody put the investment in, when they invest their money in, and then they want their money back so soon, you start explaining like it don't work like that because like it's a process behind everything. Mm-hmm. In fact, when you was breaking it down, I was listening to you. I was like, yeah, he's breaking it down. Phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Can you break it down now on why it's important to invest? But when you invest, it's to be patient with the journey.
Yeah. So when you're investing in real estate, people have the misconception, especially for like crowdfunding, stuff like that, where you're buying shares of something. People have the misconception that it's like buying something on the stock market, you know, where you can buy today. And then if you want to sell, you can sell that paper share, that electronic share to somebody else that wants to buy it the next day. But when you invest in real estate, that money is not sitting in a bank account. That money is taken and is used to acquire a real estate asset. So your money is no longer just somewhere liquid where it can be touched. So in order for you to get your money back, either two things have to happen. Either the revenue from the rents on the property are enough to aggregate and buy your shares out from you, or you have to wait till we sell the project. When we sell the project, that's when everybody gets cashed out and makes a profit. Now, along the way, you do get profits from, like, let's say rent revenue, but you're going to be a lot smaller if everybody's getting the distribution, because it's just like no different than a stock distribution. It's a small percentage paid out, dividend paid out every year to everybody. But yeah, a lot of people have a misconception. Well, if I invest in this, and I get some shares, I need my money back in a year. If I want to cash out, I can just go to the sponsors, the people that put the deal together, and tell me to, you know, refund my share. No, it don't work like that. It don't work like that. So,
what is the difference between crowdfunding and private? Is it private funding?
Private equity raise. It's the same thing.
Yeah,
it's just crowdfunding is usually. Yeah, crowdfunding is just usually smaller increments of money. Like most, like accredited investor raises, the minimum investment is like $50,000, $100,000. But with crowdfunding, it could be as little as I did $250,000 before. Most people don't do that anymore, but it may like $500 or something like that.
Oh, okay. When you work with accredited or non-accredited investors with like they can invest $250, $500, or the lowest amount. Is that more complicated than working with accredited investors?
It's just more people involved. There's a lot more investors, and a lot of them have a lot less financial education. So, you know, they don't understand a lot of the processes and things. So it could be a lot of hand holding, a lot of legwork, a lot of over communication versus the seasoned accredited investors who know what they're doing and just put their money in there and don't ask any questions until it's time to get paid out. So yeah, there's definitely pros and cons to each side. There's a lot fewer of the accredited investors out there, so you can raise more money by going the crowdfund route. But then again, like I said, there's a lot more accounting, communications required, and people management. So
that's what you said in the video. I'm remembering now, because what you just said, I remember exactly what you just said about the accounting problems and that was. When you said that, I didn't think that. Of course, I'm not in real estate anymore. But when you said it, you explained that perfectly. For someone that don't know what accredited and non-accredited is, do you mind explaining that?
Yeah. So the SEC wants to make sure that people that are novice, don't know anything about investing, aren't victimized by predatory lenders and predatory fund managers. So the rule is they figure people that make a significant amount of money are smart enough to know, because they have to have some type of financial literacy to get to where they are in life. So an accredited investor is someone who can invest in any one of these deals anywhere in the country, but they have to have a personal income of over $200,000 per year for the past 2 years if they're single. If they're a couple, they have to have made $300,000 per year collectively for the past 2 years. And the alternative to get accredited qualification is to have a net worth over $1 million, excluding your primary residence. So that eliminates a lot of people. So those three qualifiers are the only group of people before the Jobs Act that were able to actually pool their money together to invest to buy real estate. But now with the Jobs Act, the crowdfund opportunity gives everybody the right to get in for as little, it could be $1 really, it doesn't really matter how much, but people can collectively invest up to 10% of their annual income into the crowdfund.
Okay. Earlier you mentioned something about social media and how you use social media to raise, how much did you say again?
For the first project it was $1.1 million.
Oh, from social media?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when it's just like GoFundMe, right? GoFundMe. Mm-hmm. Somebody put something up there, people empathize with it, they give away money. Well, with crowdfunding, people aren't really giving away their money. They give you the money to use and they want it back with a return. But when you're solving a problem that everybody knows about and you have a strategic approach to it and the right team, it's not really that hard to raise money, because people want to invest in things that they feel are confidently able to reach whatever target that the person that's pitching the idea has. So yeah, it's a lot of moving parts to it, but it's definitely feasible.
When I started my journey half a decade ago, when I was learning more about social media marketing and communication, I didn't know it was called that. I thought it was just called posting on Instagram or posting on Facebook, or just posting. And then as I continue to do it and learn more about it, it's power within these communication tools, because you're able to communicate to so many different people in such a short span of time if you do it right. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you can speak to more people across social media is mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing. Have you ever heard of, what is it called, Silicon Valley?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you know that almost everyone that worked with the Silicon Valley back in like '01 with PayPal, it was like Elon Musk, the people who did YouTube, the people who did Instagram, the people who did Facebook, that was all in this company, and they created like social media platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started learning, I'm like, there's no way everybody who worked in PayPal has some form of social media, some form of way to communicate with the masses.
Mm-hmm.
And you broke the code. and you
broke that code. I love it.
That code.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, like I said, it was pretty straightforward. It was pretty easy. The gift and the curse about it is you're in the fishbowl, so you can't even mess up because everybody's watching.
Yeah. Everyone is watching, but everyone's watching. It can be a good thing, and also can be like a overwhelming thing. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with social media when you're the one that has to be on a public display and people have to watch you, people have to learn from you? Like, how do you be feeling about social media?
I love social media. Like I said, it's helped me raise a lot of money. I'm very cognizant of what I post because of the perception. And, you know, I always try to constantly stay in the flow of things. So I stay in front of people with the algorithms and all types of things, with types of posts that they like, you know, to see. So, yeah, I mean, I don't really have any qualms with it. I love it. And like I said, any other time I would have spent $50,000 to $100,000 marketing to try to raise that type of money, and we did it for free.
Did it for free. Now you 1.1 million all from social media. Okay, now it's time for our favorite segment, Best for Last, where we end the episode with four rapid questions to leave our listeners with some final gems of wisdom. You ready?
Let's go.
All right, so question number one, what's one book or resource that changed your perspective on business or life?
One resource. I would say social media, because I've made a lot of my connections.
I agree. What's one quote you live by when facing challenges?
Be steadfast in your goal, but flexible in your approach.
Steadfast in your goals, but flexible in your approach.
Mm-hmm. That means you know what you're going, where you're going, but it might not be a straight line. You might have to pivot this way, pivot that way, but you keep going towards that goal. Don't go off and go to another path.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. What's the best piece of advice you ever received about failure?
It's just feedback. It's not final. It's just something you need to adjust to, and go back and do it again.
And last question, what does failure's knowledge mean to you?
What does what?
Failure is knowledge mean to you.
Yeah, same thing. Failure's knowledge. It's just feedback. It's feedback on what you need to adjust. So, you know, it's just a temporary setback. You go and figure out how not to do the same part again and get to the next level. And, you know, that's the key to life. Thomas Edison, 10,000 light bulbs before he got it right. You know, you just got to keep going.
There's another movie that you just made me think about. Was it Think and Grow Rich? Thomas Edison was in Think and Grow Rich, right?
Yeah, he was part of it. It's probably the same movie.
Yeah, I think it is. Chris, man, I appreciate you, bro. Before we get off, how can people work with you? How can they join your mentorship program? How can they just follow you on social media?
Yeah, so I'm Chris Senegal, just my name, on all channels, just like I spelled it in the title. And, you know, I have the No Flips School for New Construction Development. So you just go to noflips.com and all the information is there. You can start with the course. You can join a private mentorship group. We have about 30 people in it right now. 20 of them are doing actual projects. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Pretty straightforward. And I'm accessible anyway. Just Google my name. It'll pull up all my social media stuff. So,
Chris, man, I appreciate you, bro. I'm about to stop recording now.
Okay.